You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show. Serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good day?
Stop texting about my eyes. Please.
We're going to get you the thing from A Clockwork Orange that holds your eyes open.
These texts are so mean. Salk, you're doing it the whole time.
The more you talk about it, the more they're going to text.
You're doing it the whole time. Stop it, Maura. It's not true. People are going to take pity on me and stop texting. Yeah. Salk, you were doing it the whole time you were talking to Stanton last week. Salk, I've watched online for years, and you've always had that blinking eye tick. I'm just saying. Salk, are you being held against your will? You seem to be trying to send a message by blinking Morse code. All right. That is too far. You have gone too far. That is not okay. Well, I don't know. Maybe I do have some sort of a weird eye tick thing. You should not watch that on 710.
You touch your eye every time you say that.
I know, because I'm a human being, Maura. That's what people do when they talk about a part of their body.
You're doing it again.
I know I am. Leave me alone. Oh, my God. I'm not going to be able to continue today. There's a lot of different ways, and places. You can consume the show. You can find it at 710sports.com. You can listen online there through the 710 Sports app. You can watch it, apparently, although you should not. You can get it on a podcast form later and then think, what did I miss? I better go watch this so I can see Salk look ridiculous. You can get that wherever you get your podcast. An hour from now, Matt Hasselbeck for a full hour at 9 o'clock. If you didn't catch Matt last week, it was awesome. There were just a ton of stories and great information behind the scenes, stuff you'd never heard before. Please, please come listen. 9 o'clock this morning with Matt Hasselbeck. And I'll also give you a quick reminder that the show now starts at 6. We're on at 6. So if you're just joining us now and you've always started at 7, please, we're now at 6. So come join us a little bit earlier in the day. Pete and Russ are at war. I started off as a question, but the more I talk through this and hear from guys like Greg Bishop and hear from Brock, and I just popped over, talked to G, and he's like, yeah, everybody's talking about it around the facility. Like, there's something going on here, right? I don't know exactly yet what it is. Is it all-out war? Is it Cold War? Is it preamble to war? Is it just an armed conflict? Are we sending in peacekeeping troops? Like, I don't know what level this whole thing is at, but something's going on. Something's happening.
I want to live in the world where nothing's happening, nothing's going on.
Yes.
Pete and Russ are fine.
A lot of people do.
Good.
Yes. I know that world.
Ignorance is bliss.
Do you think it's the actual world, though? Like, it's easy to come in and, like, so here's the argument against all this, and I'll go through some of the sound we have that I think really proves pretty clearly that something's going on with Pete and Russ. But I saw a texter earlier, it's gone, so I'll have to paraphrase it, but he basically said, 710-710, powered by Mac and Jack's, basically said, you're getting Ben out of shape, Pete is holding Russ accountable, that's his job. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really good counterpoint. And yet, it doesn't feel that way. So let's be clear. You might be right. This might be much ado about nothing. Maybe Pete's just holding Russ accountable. But over the last few weeks, it hasn't felt that way. And some of that is that you can't shake what happened in the offseason. Greg Bishop kind of went through it, right? The trade demand that wasn't and the back and forth and then some of the leaked information, like that stuff didn't go away just because Russ showed up and didn't get traded and just because Pete and John were quiet. That stuff didn't go away. It's still there.
Well, name a time that we've heard Pete hold Russell accountable like that. That texter saying that, like, we hear it all the time.
I'm thinking, but all right. So I'll argue on behalf of the texter and against myself. Isn't that what we've wanted Pete to do for a long time? Isn't that what Richard Sherman and Doug Baldwin and everybody else wanted? After Doug was raising the flag, do you think he went home after, I'm sure he listens to this show, listening to Pete on Monday?
Big fan.
Don't you think, huge fan. Don't you think Doug went home and raised another flag and a cheers to Pete for finally saying and holding Russ accountable? That's what they wanted. There is some truth to all that. And yet, when you put all this together, it starts this week, it starts last week with Pete, who I think was very quiet in the offseason and took a whole bunch of hits. But last week we asked about the best thing that Shane Waldron had done, and he pointed back to what they'd always done.
Our ability to sight and pick up the blitz, why this is Shane Waldron is because he's open-minded enough to do things that we've done in the past.
He's open-minded enough to do things we've done in the past, is what Pete said. Okay? Then all of a sudden on Sunday they lose. Things get away from them a little bit at the end of the game. Russ is asked about it, and he says, well, we scored 30. Now, he said more than that. That's taking a clip out of context, right? I can play like I'm a cable news network. I can take a clip out of context if I want. But he did say it. The rest of the clip is not bad. But if I'm Pete Carroll, I'm struck by, wait, you scored 30, so everything's fine? Actually, in this game, you needed to score 33. Sorry.
I'm still lost in that Pete watches and hears that and then decides I'm going to respond in my own way on the media instead of talking to Russ. That feels so backwards to me.
And yet, it's exactly like every relationship you know.
I know, it's just different.
Like, it shouldn't feel that backwards.
I get that argument, but it's like it's...
Because Pete's a human. Because Russ is a human. Because athletes are human beings, as hard as it is to sometimes remember. And so, look, if I'm Pete and I hear Russ say, or I just read the clip of Russ saying, well, we scored 30. Here it is. Here's a little bit of Russ saying, yeah, we scored 30.
I'll talk about it, you know, what can we do better as and groups and stuff like that or whatever. I think we did a good job. I think, you know, listen, I mean, we scored, I don't know, 30 points or whatever.
Yeah, okay. He did a pretty good job. We scored 30 points or whatever. And if I'm Pete, I'm saying, yeah, you did. But at the end of the game, I needed more than that. We needed 33.
I thought Russ took advantage of the game well until the last sequence. We had a play action pass, and I wish we could control the ball and check the ball down there.
We did well until the last possession, when we needed to do something else, when we needed to do something differently than what we did.
Took a shot at Tyler, and then we went up to DK on second down, and then our opportunity escapes us right there, and they get the ball inside the 40. So that sequence was the one. I wish Russ could have helped us there.
I'm sorry, I got to stop it again. I wish Russ could have helped us there. Pete does not say those things. Pete says, I wish we could have helped him. That's what you generally hear from Pete. I wish we could have helped him there. I wish we could have given him more. I wish we could have done more. I wish Russ could have helped us there? That is a marked change in tone and substance from what we've ever heard from Pete Carroll before.
This made completions for us. We needed to just move the ball there and change the field position at least in overtime, because you're playing field goal right there, and unfortunately we didn't get it done.
Yeah, he didn't get it done. He didn't give you a chance at that point to win the game.
Help me understand something. You've heard the phrase, the squeaky wheel gets the grease, right? This team's been winning, going to the playoffs. Everything's been fine. To your words and not yours, everybody's, winning solves everything. If you keep winning, you don't have to address problems.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that maybe is rearing its head?
Well, I think that's true everywhere, right? I mean, like, if as long as you win, whatever, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But then the moment you lose, the moment there's adversity, all of the things that were never truly put to bed, that you never truly brought out into the light and dealt with, right? Again, my wife's a therapist. She makes people actually deal with problems, right? She gives them the skills that they need. She does cognitive behavioral therapy. So she gives people the skills they need to try to deal with their problems. Right? That's essentially, as I understand it, she'll probably hear this and be like, that's not what I do. But that's my understanding of what Heather does. Right? She helps people, gives them the skills to deal with the problems they might have. Well, if you don't actually deal with things, they fester. They can get covered up for a while. Right? They can get covered up. But if you don't actually try to make a change or build a relationship, and in this case, between Pete and Russ, that doesn't go away. Right. And I'll point back to what other people tell me. Again, Brock saying to me in the offseason, yeah, everything sounds good with Dwayne Brown and with Quandre Diggs, but we'll see what happens when there's adversity. The first bad play of the year and Quandre Diggs spikes his helmet into the ground. I don't know if those two things are connected, but it certainly recalled what I had heard from Brock. The moment there's adversity, then we'll find out just how much these things are truly dealt with or just smoothed over temporarily. And right now, it seems like things were just smoothed over rather than actually dealt with between Pete and Russ. So I'm not going to get ahead of myself. I know you got texters on here saying, oh, who stays and who goes? We're not there yet. Let's calm down.
Yeah. It does feel like I'm hearing from my friends that my parents are fighting.
Yes, but that's what you're hearing. Your parents are fighting. Mom and dad are fighting. I don't know what else to tell you. That's how it's going right now. And it doesn't feel good. It might make your eye blink uncontrollably.
That's what it is.
Maybe that's what it is for me. Yeah, I never had this eye tick.
I'm feeling it in my right knee. It must mean mom and dad are fighting.
Pete and Russ are fighting. The next thing you know, I start like blinking uncontrollably in front of the microphone. Yeah, I don't know that we know yet what to do about all of this, but certainly there has been a lot of drama surrounding this Seahawks team for a while, and it's not going away anytime soon.
In a world where wizards wander.
Yeah, I think he's a wizard.
Really, really bright.
But I think he's got a great understanding of the game. He's so knowledgeable.
Moonballs fly free.
He's going to let fly deep downfield. Got a man open, Lockett. Touchdown, Seahawks.
And double-digit leads are never safe.
And just like that, Tennessee right back in it.
One man.
Let's welcome in the coach, Coach Carroll.
Tasked with navigating a team through ridiculous rules.
Where'd that flag come from?
What?
Tati. Come on.
What do you do, hurt his feelings?
Oh, late flag comes in.
Roughing the passer. Defense.
Oh, my goodness.
Stranded on his own sideline, Pete Carroll calls on an unlikely collaborator, the bench.
The bench is a great ally, you know, for you, for the coach, you know, when you have to use it.
Can Coach Carroll ready Russell, steady DK, and get his defense back to business?
Tannehill goes down on the blitz. Bobby Wagner.
Will Waldron find his wizard cape and return to the cauldron of creativity?
Touchdown, Seahawks!
This fall, experience the highs and lows of Seahawks football.
Holy catfish! This offense is explosive.
It's so funny, man.
Waldron's Cauldron, that's what I want to call it.
Yes, that's the movie. You got to go watch it.
It's the playbook. Where Waldron's Cauldron, that's the movie.
Pete Carroll and his buddy, The Bench, go on a mission to try to solve crimes or whatever. It's so good. I really enjoyed that. Hey, let me play you one other piece of sound on this. That's really funny, Justin. Nice job by
Thank you.
It just totally cracks me up. The idea of Pete and The Bench off together as his one ally left in a world that has gone awry around him is so good. Maura found some sound that I want to play you. And look, you could take of this what you want, but it's a minute that I think is worth your time. There's a bunch of voices on here, so I'll set it up. It starts with Marcus Spears, and then you get Ryan Clark, and then you get Dan Orlovsky, and then eventually Mina Kimes at the end. But they have quite the debate over Pete and Russ and exactly what they think is going on here in Seattle.
I understand we're talking about this particular game and that particular drive. But if you like, this is the problem you run into as Pete Carroll when you say things like that, right? You have a quarterback that literally is the focus of your offense, right?
But that's the issue.
Like, listen, you can say
seven other teams.
You can say we just didn't get it done. When you say that, you are saying that's his fault.
Yeah,
Marcus,
you know why? You know why he's saying that's his fault?
Why?
Because in the offseason, you said, I wish I had more to do with everything. I want to be this. I want to make
my pushback.
Make some plays.
No,
my pushback to that would be, if I'm Russell Wilson and I hear that, I'm going, well, let's sit down. Like that I want to watch the tape together. Because you can't say on that overtime drive we should have gotten completions. When I go, coach, there ain't no one open. There's no one open on three of those plays.
You can't tell me nothing on this show, right? You can't say something to me on this show, and then I can't come on this show and say something about you. If Russell Wilson had a problem in the offseason and you want to sit down and have a talk about it, sit down and have a talk about it.
I think that's, first of all, I love Ryan Clark. I think he's great. And I think he calls it out pretty well there. Why is Pete responding? Because you called him out in the offseason and said you wanted more responsibility. Okay, you want more responsibility? Well, where were you at the end of the game? All right, you want the responsibility. Check it down to the open guy. You know why they talk about this stuff through the media? I've been thinking about your question, Justin. You know why they do this? You watched the Jordan documentary, right?
Yeah.
What's the quote that everybody loves from the Jordan documentary?
And I took that personally. yeah.
Right?
Right.
Why do they go through the media? Because you embarrass me through the media. And now I'm going to come back at you.
So that's all this is just arm wrestling through quotes in the media.
I'm not saying it is, but I'm sure not saying it's not. It's 8:15, time for Need to Know.
Need to Know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Yeah, the offseason tension between Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson has not gone away. You thought maybe it was put to bed, but any parent who's ever tried to put a toddler to bed, especially after it's been eating candy, knows they just keep coming right back out of the room again. Depending on how much you read into the comments, I really think this seems to be turning into a cold war between Pete and Russ. Neither party overtly commenting on the other, but both having a way of getting their message out through the media. First, it was the coach praising Shane Waldron's willingness to incorporate existing parts of the leftover offense. Then he spoke to his disappointment in the way Sunday's loss ended, criticized his quarterback for not checking to the open man, and also said, "I wish Russ could have helped us there. Unfortunately, just didn't get it done. Those are fighting words from most coaches. On the other side of things, we heard Colin Cowherd dropping some praise of Russ, but it also included a line about Pete Carroll exerting more control of the draft process in Seattle, which A, I don't think is true, but B, it sounds exactly like something that Russell's agent, Mark Rogers, would feed to a host like Colin Cowherd. None of this is definitive. None of this is set in stone. It does require you to read into things a little bit and to extrapolate from what the facts are. There is no fact that says Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll are at war or a cold war or are heading to a divorce or anything like that. There's no fact that anyone can point to, including me, and said, this is happening right now. Except that we can all use our power to extrapolate from the things we do see, from the things we do hear, from the things we do know about in the past. And it all leads me to the conclusion that there's a problem right now between these two that was not buried in the offseason, was not put away, was not dealt with. And now it's rearing its ugly head, which is too bad. So I don't know that anything happens right now, but we're certainly going to have our eyes on this because things do not appear to be hunky-dory.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
The Mariners versus the A's has been a heck of a matchup this year for the Mariners. They just seem to have their number for whatever reason. Beat Oakland again last night. Took the first two games now of this four-game set. This time it was Marco Gonzalez, who was really good yesterday. Quality start, six innings. Allowed just the two solo home runs. Was essentially dominant other than that. Man, Matt Olson just has his number. Sixth home run. Olson has now hit off Marco Gonzalez, and he did this one with two strikes. He's just got him. He just sees him very well. J.P. Crawford, a heck of a game. Supplied the offense, three hits, a home run, two driven in, nearly hit for the cycle, just needed a triple. He could have taken one from either Kelnick or Dylan Moore. Both of them hit triples in the game, which led to a couple of runs. A few thoughts from this game. One, Crawford looks so good, man. I just love J.P. Crawford. He's going to win another Gold Glove, I would think. His bat has come around in a way that I'm not sure everybody believed that it would as recently as a year ago. You throw in his leadership, throw in his hustle, throw in just the joy with which he plays the game and what he brings to his teammates. I just see him here now for the long term. And that means that with all the shortstops that are available in free agency this offseason, if one of them is to come here, the odds are they're playing another position, either second or third base, which keeps bringing me back to the name Marcus Semien, because you're going to need to replace the production of Kyle Seager. There's no doubt Semien could do that and play third base. As for Marco Gonzalez, gosh, the second half has been so good. And just a reminder that he may still end up being a key piece of this whole thing. When you're through the rebuild, as you're looking to contend next year, no reason Marco, as a lefty who does not throw particularly hard, that he can't be good for the medium term, if not the long term. And then Kelnick, another powerful shot yesterday. You see his pop. This was a triple, hustling hard out of the box. He just seems to be finding himself right now. And that's not surprising. As we were saying yesterday, he's at the age now where he should not go backwards again. Yeah, he'll slump. Every single major leaguer does. But I think the worst is now behind him. I think the future for him is incredibly bright. Multi-tool athlete who can bring everything to the table, and he seems to now be moving in the right direction. Last thing about last night, unfortunately, as great as it was, everybody else won. Red Sox, Blue Jays, Yankees, all remain ahead of the Mariners, who are three back. I'm watching. I'm hoping. I know they are as well. So back at it tonight, 6:40 start, Chris Flexen against public enemy number one, Cole Irvin, who talked trash about the Mariners earlier in the year, and they've made him pay for it ever since.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Huge day tomorrow that may or may not be on your radar screen. The Seattle Kraken officially kick off their inaugural campaign with the start of their first training camp. Hockey training camp tomorrow in Northgate. What will we learn between now and the start of the season? I would say quite a bit. Position battles are going to be all over this roster because no one's ever been on this team before. No one has a position from last year to defend. So it's not like we're going to point and say, oh, that's new. Everything is going to be new. Who's playing center? Who's playing wing? They got a bunch of guys on this team that have done both over the course of their career. And we'll find out what the coaching staff thinks of them. Who do they think is good enough to play the pivot, which is another word for the center? Who do they think needs to be on the wing? Who's the first line guy on this team? Who do they think can score? Who's going to put the puck in the net? Who do they see as more of a checking presence and someone who can play defense? That would be a third line type. And you'll know based on some of the names that are assumed, right? If you're playing with Jordan Eberle, who's probably the best scorer on this team, you're probably a first line guy who can score. If you're playing with Brandon Tanev, who is a checker, a hardcore, gritty winger, dig in the corners, play defense, well, then you're probably a third-line winger. So we're going to find out a lot about this team once we see who is on which lines with whom. And cool thing is they all wear different colors. So line one gets a color, line two gets a color, line three gets a color. So it's easy to spot when you're in the stands watching. Pretty excited. Training camp tomorrow as we get ready for hockey. Those are three things you need to know every hour, quarter past the hour.
Hockey training camp, can fans watch it the same way? I mean, this is all new. Can you watch
it the
same
way? Well,
you're
not on a berm. No, there's no berm.
No berm. But can you go? Yes. Are there tickets? Like, how are they doing this?
I think
this?
You have to be a part of, like, the Kraken Club. I forget what it is, which I think is easy to do. You just have to, like, become a member of their Kraken Club. But there is room. There's not as much room, obviously, as you would get for a Seahawks one. Yeah. But there is room. You can go down and watch. I've been to training camps before. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see what that's like. I've been to spring training. I've been to, obviously, NFL training camp. I've no clue what this feels like, NHL. From a training camp standpoint, is it fun? Are there DJs? Is it exciting?
I've never seen any of that. No, I mean, hockey, I mean, like, they call it, like, it's like it's being played in a barn, right? I mean, like, it's supposed to have sort of a, like, an outdoor skating the lake type of a feel to it, I think.
Do you think we'll get one of the outdoor games?
I think eventually, right? The only issue with doing an outdoor game here is you can handle cold, you can even deal with snow. Rain destroys the outdoor game, so... Look, I guess with T-Mobile being open air, it is possible that you could do it there if they were to work it out. I think that'd be great.
Be awesome.
How fun would that be?
It'd be really, really cool.
They could figure it out. They dealt with like the ice melting at Tahoe last year. Right. They figured it out.
They always seem to figure it out.
And they did what do they call it at T-Mobile? The Christmas thing where you walk through the lights.
Oh, that thing is awesome.
There was ice skating there.
That's true. I did it. I went ice skating there. That's called Enchant.
Yes. Enchant, yeah.
Enchant's
right.
Awesome.
It's really cool.
I really hope it comes back. Yeah, I kind of missed it. We did it like Christmas Eve a couple of years ago. It was really fun, and food was good, ice skating, and hanging out. The lights are beautiful.
Right, it's really cool.
It is really cool. I did not think it would be nearly as cool as it ended up being. So, all right, a couple of things. Speaking of those Mariners and speaking of that park, for the final homestand of the Mariners season, 710 ESPN Seattle is bringing you a chance to score Mariners tickets for just $7.10 for the game on Monday, September 27th, as the Mariners host the A's. Automatic win, by the way. Just use the promo code 710, redeem this special offer in the center field bleacher seats. More info at 710sports.com/events. Oh, I'm being told Enchant not back this year, but hopefully next year. How about that?
Somebody just said it is back, but yeah, I don't know.
Not this year.
Not this year.
Not this year, but hopefully next year, and definitely Winter Classic at T-Mobile, right?
Love it.
I think it'd be sweet. I mean, you got because you can, I didn't think of it as I was sort of working my way through it. Once you can close the roof, then honestly, it's almost better than a lot of the other places.
That's why I thought you went with T-Mobile to begin with, because you can close the roof.
Yeah, you got to do that. All right, let's do it. Can we have another campaign?
Campaign
so what do
now.
We have? We have Ann Wilson to sing the national anthem at the All-Star game from Hart. And then you've got now the Winter Classic to be played on New Year's Day here at T-Mobile.
I think we need an NFL draft here, too.
How about the Olympics? Let's just go for broke and a Super Bowl and, like, let's go all the way in. Michael Bumpus joins us next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle. It is Washington Wednesday. It's the Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle. It's also Matt Hasselbeck Day. We'll be talking to Matt. For the entire 9 o'clock hour, half hour from now, don't go anywhere. Looking forward to that. It was so much fun last week. This guy has so many stories and insight into what's really going on in the NFL. So Matt Hasselbeck joins us for an hour, starting at 9 o'clock. Right now, Michael Bumpus, our regular Wednesday meeting. Hi, Bump. How we doing?
What's going on? I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty well. This little Pete Russ soap opera kind of has me intrigued, obviously. It feels like as you start piecing together all of the quotes and the comments from each of them over the last couple of days that, you know, whatever drama may have taken place this offseason, whatever tension there was never truly put to rest. And it seems like it's starting to leak out a little bit.
It could be that. Or it could be they just took a loss, man. And both of these guys are frustrated and Pete Carroll is being transparent, maybe a bit more transparent than we're used to seeing. I don't disagree with Pete. You know, I think that there were opportunities for Russ to win this game. And typically when he's in those situations, he doesn't. And then I look at Russell Wilson. I'm like, all right, well, yeah, I think I heard you play the clip. Well, we score 30. And he's not lying. They did score 30. And when you score 30, you have a great chance to win football games. But he didn't come through in the clutch like we are used to seeing. I think we're just seeing two guys who are frustrated, who are being honest. I don't hear any lies being told there. Mm-hmm. But all it takes is a win. You know, we win this week, all this stuff is water under the bridge, and we can move on. But I hear two competitors who are keeping each other accountable, I think.
Yeah, where are you on quarterback wins? Because I always look at that as the stat that matters most to quarterbacks, because I don't care what you did for the first 58 minutes. Most NFL games come down to the end. How do you feel about quarterback wins as a stat?
I like it because you don't win consistently without a good quarterback, right? There are some circumstances where you have a great defense that carries you, you have a run game that carries you, but especially nowadays the way this game is played, the ball is going to be in the quarterback's hands late and early and in the middle of the game. You're going to spread the ball out and you are going to throw it, and the quarterback is going to make checks at the line. So no, I like the stat quarterback wins, because you rarely see a good team win without an elite quarterback.
Where were the easy completions in this game? So, I mean, I'm with you. I think Russ kind of needed to step up his game at the end. And like Pete said, I was all over that Monday. But Brock, I think, correctly pointed out there weren't as many easy completions for Russ as there were in week one. Where did they go?
I just think that, you know, the defense did a good job of shutting that stuff down. If you look at what DK had, 11 targets, I believe 6 catches, and they were trying to get him the football underneath, but they did a great job of just clouding that second level, man. There was always a corner. There was always a linebacker or a safety there to kind of make those hitches and those slants hard to catch. So I think you have to tip your hat to the Tennessee Titans and say, look, their defensive coordinator put them in position to make plays. They watched film. They took away what these guys were trying to accomplish, which they did more of last week, which that underneath stuff. Man, clouding that second level. So what does Shane Waldron have to do? He has to find ways to get those guys open again. And I spoke with Ray Roberts during the game, and he made a great point. Is, look, the pre-snap shifts and motions weren't there like they were last week. They just weren't. And I like pre-snap shifts.
Meaning they didn't use them as much?
Yeah, didn't use them as much.
Why do you think that is?
And my theory was, well, I just saw theory, speculation. I don't know their game plan, but my theory was, as a play caller, excuse me, you can get caught up in saying, okay, we're not going to show them what we showed them on film last week. Mm-hmm. We are going to change it up a little bit and try to get them on their heels a bit. So I think that was the case. He goes, mm-hmm. They're going to prepare for this. I'm going to show them something different.
Right. Yeah, so you're almost outthinking them before they've even had a chance to react to the first thing. You're adjusting too soon almost.
Exactly. I think that as a coordinator, you have to show them what you put on film last week, and then you do something off of that.
What do you think's going on with DK Metcalf? I don't mean to, again, find drama where there isn't any. He just seems, I don't know, it leads me to ask, like, what's going on with him right now?
I don't think anything's going on with him. I think that he has a target on his back for sure. Mm-hmm. And I think that DBs are going to try to get under his skin, because that's part of his game, right? He gets under player skin. He's physical. He's rough. He really pushes them that way. And referees are looking after him to see what he's doing before, during, and after plays. And so are these DBs. I mean, their goal is to get under his skin. And then as far as his play, I just don't think his number has been called. But with all the success that you've seen with Tyler Lockett, you have to start incorporating DK, because a smart defensive coordinator is going to say, all right, yeah, we have to get or contain 16.
Weird question for you. How hard is it to not catch a ball that's thrown to you?
How hard is it to not catch a ball that's thrown to you?
And the reason I ask is one of the last plays of regulation was the little dump pass out to Travis Homer. Uh-huh. That if he doesn't catch it, they have a much better chance to score on that drive than him catching it, falling down, and wasting 8 seconds.
Yeah. You know what? That reminds me. We played Auburn, and we're out there, and I believe my quarterback, Alex Breen, threw a football to me, and it was tipped. So it was going behind the line of scrimmage, and I still caught it. Mm-hmm. You know, so as a receiver, like, you want to catch everything. So I think that, well, Homer is a running back, but he was a receiver in that sense. I think it's extremely hard. It's almost like when you're going to score a touchdown late in the game, right, and just remember, okay, I got to slide and take this knee. You know what I mean? It's tough to do. It is tough to do.
It's got to be a strange thing, but as a fan, it's like, no, don't catch it. You're making this worse. The time actually probably matters more than the yard or two that you could potentially pick up there. So, yeah, just a funky game. A funky game for the Seahawks and certainly a funky fourth quarter. Be nice for them to go back on the road this week and try to get going in the right direction. UW got it going in the right direction, that's for sure. It is Washington Wednesday, so let's at least get a little bit in here. You think they're okay now?
I think they did what they were supposed to do against Arkansas State, and I think that that whole team needed to make those big plays. Dylan Morris needed to have a play. Jaden McMillan needed to do his thing. You get the run game going. I don't know if they're fine. You know, we still have to see what they do against a worthy opponent, mm-hmm. but they did what they were supposed to do, and I think that win really helps their mentality.
What do they have this week?
I'm not sure. Who do they have this week?
I don't know. I haven't looked at that. It's only Wednesday. I haven't gotten all the way to looking at who they've got this week. Who do they have?
Cal.
That's what I was going to say. Cal. Okay, Cal. So, you like that matchup?
You know Cal's going to play defense. You know that Wilcox is going to have those guys ready to go. What makes Cal scary this week is because they put up 40-something points last week. Mm-hmm. Cal doesn't do that. If Cal can start putting up those type of numbers, then they're going to be tough. But Cal always plays UW tough. So I think it's going to be a tough game. But this is a proven game for UW. All right, you took care of Arkansas State. Now take care of a worthy opponent in the Pac-12.
Bump, you ever notice that I do something weird with blinking my eyes a lot? Have you ever noticed this?
I don't watch the stream, man. I've heard all the commotion, but I don't.
You've never
seen it
in person, right?
No, I've never seen it.
All right, we were out in the golf course together. You didn't see any weird bump blinking or anything, right?
No, it was sunny that day, so man, right. if I did see a blink, it was natural because the sun was out.
All right, buddy, I appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, man, have a good one.
There you go. There's Michael Bumpus, who we love talking to every Wednesday at 8:30, and just a good perspective there, and I like what he had to say. It's interesting, the stuff about the motion. Not as much, you know, reshifting and motions and all of that. And yeah, look, this is Waldron's rookie year for real. He's got to figure some of this stuff out as he goes. He's just a tough spot to learn on the job, where you've got Pete, you've got Russ, you've got all the history, you've got the tension between them, you've got the emphasis and the urgency on this year. You hear someone like Greg Bishop from Sports Illustrated, who's been around this team, written deep dives into the Seahawks, say that if they don't make a really deep playoff run and do something special, that could be it for Pete and Russ and their relationship together. So there's a lot. I mean, Shane Waldron, I will say this all year long, is the most interesting figure on the Seahawks because he is right in the middle of everything. And you've got two really powerful guys around you in Pete and Russ that don't seem to be on the same page, and we saw a really clear example of that over the last couple of days after their first loss. So John Clayton will join me. I know John thinks nothing of this story, so we'll have to find something else to ask John about because he thinks this is all overblown. We got some great injury stuff to talk about with John, and then Matt Hasselbeck will join me in 20 minutes. You're going to want to be here for that. It is the Mike Salk Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton's Morning Drive, every morning at 8:45 on the Mike Salk Show.
I thought you saw a lot of good things out of offense. I think that was a very positive sign.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the professor, John Clayton.
It just amazes me. I give it credence, but not total credence.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Mike Salk.
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
We should get injury report out later today for the Seahawks. Anything your eyes will be peeled and open for?
I think the big one just to follow is Damian Lewis, to see where he is. And it seems, I think, reasonably optimistic. I mean, he did play last week, and I think he was affected by the fact that he had the groin injury. But I think that the chance to have the extra couple of days of rest and all that different thing, we'll see if they give him a rest day or whatever. But I think that Damian Lewis is going to be one of the keys, because he's so important to the offensive line. Because when you have Lewis and you have Gabe Jackson, it makes it easier on the center, Kyle Fuller, to be able to operate. So I think that's going to be one of the keys to see where he is.
Yeah, D. Eskridge also another name we'll be looking at, right, to see whether or not he's out of the concussion protocol and able to practice. So
He should be.
Yeah, sounds like that. We'll find out some of that stuff a little bit later today. Speaking of injuries, the Niners are so banged up, and it's funny how one position will just get like one after another after another. What are the Niners going to do at running back this week?
Good question. I mean, it's like I know that they have. I mean, they have. I mean, could you imagine they were down their top three running backs? Because during the game, Jaquil Hasty, I mean, he gets a high ankle sprain, so he's going to be out probably 4 to 6 weeks. And then the other two running backs that they had both got injured, so technically they were down five running backs.
That's a lot.
And so it's like, I know that everybody wants to rush the 49ers back to the Super Bowl or back to the playoffs, but I say pause. They're the most injured team in football. Last year, they had 131 missed starts with injuries or COVID-19, and here they are. I mean, they're already down. They've lost their starting cornerback, their best cornerback, and Jason Verrett. They didn't have Emmanuel Mosley for the first 2 weeks of the season with a knee injury. You know, they're already down two receivers. Richie James was waived injured with a knee injury. They had, you know, other problems at the wide receiver position. So it's a constant thing with them. And, you know, it's not like they were able to jump on this quickly and be like Baltimore and get the Latavius Murray and be able to get Devontae Freeman. So they are, I think, starting to get into trouble because you're right, they have nothing at the running back position.
I saw that Ben Roethlisberger's been added to the injury list. I was shocked to see him there. It's probably his first time, I think, on the injury report. It's a pec injury this time. My question for you, John, is how will Ben Roethlisberger show his pectoral muscles on national TV this weekend?
I don't know if he's going to be able to show because I think there's going to be a question mark whether he's going to be able to play.
He'll play.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know. Even today.
Yeah, he'll play.
Yeah, but he even said that.
You and I both know he'll play.
Yeah, I know. That's him. But, you know, he said it's still really sore.
Oh.
So he can't reach and do all those different things. And so even though, you know, the odds are he'll try to play, I still think there's a big question mark there. And what you're looking at in the first week of the season, or first 2 weeks of the season, I mean, what, in week two, there was like, you know, 20% of the league's quarterbacks went down with some kind of an injury. Now, again, Ben probably less serious than everybody else. But, I mean, look at that long list of injuries. I mean, we find that Tua has a fractured rib. He's probably going to be out 3 to 6 weeks. I mean, Tyrod Taylor in Houston has the hamstring. He's going to be out a month. You know, you've got the ankle injuries for Carson Wentz. I say ankles plural because, you know, I don't think there's going to be any way that he's going to play. I mean, it's just devastating to see how bad it is on the injury front for quarterbacks.
Your friend Stephen A. Smith was saying he would rather have Kyler Murray right now than Russell Wilson. You buying that?
No. I mean, again, it shows it's like, you know, did he consult with Colin Coward or something like that?
Colin's pro-Russ. I mean, Colin was out there saying that Pete's the problem and that Russ is the best thing ever.
Yeah.
He's on the other side of that.
Yeah, but again, it's like, you know, how many Super Bowls has he been to? I mean, Kyler Murray. And how many playoff games has he been to? Stephen A. wants to rush things, you know, and you can see his time continues to go, even though I'm a big fan of Stephen A. because he's always been nice to me. I mean, he tends to go for the click bites. And, you know, and saying something like that is wrong.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I wish there was a way, and I understand the game that Stephen A. is playing. I mean, that he's got a specific job to do on that show, et cetera, and he needs people to watch. But I wish there was a way to say Kyler Murray's really good and getting better. He's not quite at Russell Wilson level yet, but man, it's something to watch out for over the next year or two because he might have the ability to get there.
Oh, agreed. I mean, same thing in the future for Trey Lance. I mean, this division, as good as it is right now, is going to be even tougher coming up in the next couple of years if Kyler Murray continues to improve, and there's no doubt he is improving, and yet Matthew Stafford is an improvement at the quarterback position. And, you know, Trey Lance, I think, has a chance to be a really good one, and so that's going to make it tough in the future for Seattle. That's why they need to win now.
We'll probably spend some time on this with Matt Hasselbeck, who's going to join us in a few minutes for the 9 o'clock hour again. The Matt Hasselbeck Show, episode 2, coming up here at 9 o'clock. But this whole taunting thing, you know, I don't know whether everyone understands how it came to be. I mean, this was not like Roger Goodell woke up one day and decided, hey, taunting is a problem. The competition committee, the subcommittee that recommended this, is full of NFL coaches. Andy Reid, Brian Flores, John Harbaugh, Sean McDermott, Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan. I mean, like, this is not like a random group of like, you know, this was not like Tipper Gore who decided to get rid of this. These are NFL coaches.
Yeah, it is. But again, the competition committee is run by Rich McKay. You know, it has, you know, John Mara in there as an owner, and it has other people. But I just think that each year it seems like they come up with some rule that's just too much.
Mm-hmm.
And this rule is too much. I mean, you go back a couple years ago when they expanded the, you know, the defensive pass interference, and you saw what a disaster that was. It pretty much cost the Saints a chance to go to the Super Bowl. And, you know, it puts the officials right in the middle. But again, you know, it's like if you have a play like DJ Reed, where you're basically celebrating an incompletion, next thing you know, he gets a taunting penalty. Mm. And right now, you know, the Seahawks, I mean, lead the league in taunting penalties. I mean, I just look at this and just shake my head. It's like, yeah, it's too much.
I agree that it's too much. But I think, you know, what you hear here from Mike Tomlin makes some sense. He says all of us to a man acknowledged that this is a something that needs to be addressed. That's why it's a point of emphasis. That's why none of us are surprised at the number of calls in terms of them being increased. The players will adjust. They always do. And they better adjust quickly, specifically speaking of mine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no doubt. Because, again, it's like, I mean, you can see how costly these penalties can be because here's a long
15 yards.
Yeah, I mean, a long incompletion downfield. And the next thing you know, you get a taunting penalty and you get a 15-yard gain. I mean, you know, I guess it helps offenses because for the most part, I mean, you figure it's going to be more of a defensive player, although, you know, DK Metcalf is in that taunting mix. But, you know, I just think it's too much. I mean, you don't watch football to watch officials throw flags. And to add something that's going to add to the flag count, I don't like.
John, good stuff. Looking forward to tomorrow. We'll talk to you at 8:45.
Okay, thanks.
Right, every morning, John Clayton, the professor himself at 8:45 right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. All right, you guys ready? Last week was as well-received as anything we've done. So obviously really big shoes to fill. We created a large footprint that we're going to have to try to exceed. But Matt Hasselbeck, for a full hour, lots of stories, lots of information, lots of commentary from someone you love. And it's obviously not me. Matt Hasselbeck for a whole hour next on the Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.